It's time for overtime.
I think I'm ready for this.
Heck yeah.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
In the left center field, that's hit well. That'll split the gap.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to the Monday edition of Overtime. It is nasty, yucky, and wet, and like you out there, I lost some sleep last night over this storm, and what a weekend it was. Beautiful day yesterday, not a beautiful night, not a beautiful day today, but certainly a ton to get to from across the sports world. It's the Monday, June 17th edition of Overtime. I'm your host, as always, Burt Ramin. You can track me down before, during, or after the show anytime on Twitter at BurtESPN. Other ways to engage with the show, drop me an email, Burt@ESPNSiouxFalls.com. And of course, the ESPN hotline, as always, 605-362-3776. We got all sorts of goodies in the studio to give away and get in your hands this week and next week, because we're excited to share the airwaves with you, talk sports and so much more. We still have plenty of things that go boom in the form of Pyro Bucks to Pyro City, I-29T fireworks exit just south of Sioux Falls. Got some Spring Creek golf that I could hook you up with. It's not really golfing weather today, although if it ain't raining and it dries out just a bit, we'll have a great opportunity to hit the links here in our area in due time. Spring Creek Country Club right down south of us in Harrisburg. I got a free round for you and a half cart as well throughout the week. We got the Identity Crisis Friday Parlay, as well as the High Noon Showdown coming up this week. On today's show, on this day in sports history, we'll sprinkle that in hour number one in about 15 minutes. In about 30 minutes, we'll be talking with Sam Amico, senior NBA writer at HoopsWire.com. We were talking to Sam heading into the weekend and saying, hey, let's get you on the show next week. We'll recap the season or talk about a potential Game 5, a very surprising result in Game 4. Mavericks do have a heartbeat after all. We'll talk about the storylines ahead of Game 5 of the NBA Finals and more. We will check in on the Iowa Hawkeyes. We're just about smack dab in the middle of the college football offseason. It has been a long wait for things to get to this stage. We're checking in, recapping spring ball, talking schedules, and so much more lately. On Friday, we talked with Mike Grimm and talked about Gopher football. Today, we welcome Sean Bach of 24/7 Sports onto the program to talk about the Iowa Hawkeyes, the new offensive coordinator. Maybe this offense can put the football in the end zone, or maybe just maybe through the uprights this year and be all the difference there in Iowa City. Sean Bach of 24/7 Sports swings by around 11:45. It tees us up nicely for an hour number two. Highlights, headlines, latest from the NBA and the NHL, including odds and storylines heading into the pair of Game 5s upcoming. NFL latest later on in hour number two. And of course, we got to get to your daily dose of the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there's certainly a lot from the sports world to go around. The NHL Saturday was Game 4 from Edmonton, and the Oilers may have looked dead in the water, may have looked unable to score the puck at points during the first three games of the series. That changed in a big way on Saturday night. Connor McDavid netted one, had three assists, and Edmonton destroys Florida in Game 4.
Oilers break it up. Here's a shot. Score! Connor McDavid off the rush, set up by Hyman. And Edmonton extends to a 4-1 lead in Game 4.
4-1 at that point, 8-1 was the final. Again, Connor McDavid, one of many stars on Saturday night for Edmonton. One goal and three assists. Florida still has the stranglehold lead on the series 3-1. That audio courtesy of 630-CHED. Game 5 coming up Tuesday night. Oilers and Panthers from the Miami area, 7 o'clock on ABC. NBA, you got to go all the way back to Friday night, where Dallas pours it on Boston, 122-84 the final. Luka Doncic, 29 9 points. Boston still leads it 3-1. Jason Kidd says we know what got us here and we know who we rely on moving forward in the series.
We started to knock down shots here in game 4, and hopefully we can get those same shots in game 5 and have the opportunity to knock them down. But looking at Luka and Kai, those two have to set the tone for us, and everybody else will follow.
Again, Luka Doncic has been the tone setter throughout the series. Couple big games for Kyrie Irving, but Luka 29 points in a game 4 win. They look to get it back again tonight. Boston is a heavy favorite, 6.5 points, so not tremendously heavy, but a well-favored team tonight on their home floor to close out the series in 5. Jaylen Brown says we are very close to getting this thing done.
This is what we all work for. We are at the precipice of completing what we set out to do at the beginning of the season. So I think it's not difficult to get everybody in that locker room on the same page right now.
That's Jaylen Brown. As far as the pressure in the series, Jason Tatum says there's not a whole lot of pressure being at home tonight.
I don't look at it as pressure. I do notice, especially this time of the season, playoff time, and obviously being in the finals for the second time. When you drive around and go to the gas station, or I went to go get some ice cream yesterday, you know, it's Celtics gear everywhere, and everybody's super excited about this team and what we've accomplished and what we have the chance to accomplish.
Again, Boston 6.5-point favorites tonight, 7:30 on ABC for Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Other NBA news, this has been newsworthy since the jump. The Lakers with the head coach opening. Evan Cohen talking about the new candidates for the job and why one of them might not be such a good fit.
If J.J. Redick was interviewing for the head coaching job, offense, of the Charlotte Hornets, we would look at this completely. Oh, yeah, you know what? Good roll of the dice. He went to school in North Carolina. Worth a try. To me, the Lakers are a job you graduate into.
Agreed. Mm-hmm.
Darvin Ham spent forever as an assistant after being a head, after being a player. There would be an argument that we should see more jumps amongst the head coaches within the same sport.
Right.
Like, oh, you do a great job with Team X. Now you get to be that team's head coach, like we see in college, right?
Yeah, I was just
you're a mid-major,
say.
And then you get to be a major head coach.
It does feel pretty darn odd, the overall caliber of coaching candidates that the Lakers are pursuing. They went after the best coach, if not the best, second best, third best coach in college basketball right now in Dan Hurley, back-to-back national champion. And their other front runners, James Borrego, J.J. Redick, maybe a few others sprinkled in. Redick is a guy that has no assistant coaching experience. He's got no head coaching experience, no collegiate coaching experience, and he has a front line and is a front runner for a job in L.A., headlining one of the best franchises in the history of the league, if not the best. It does feel pretty odd, to the point of Evan Cohen this morning on Unsportsmanlike. Again, Game 5 tonight, Mavericks and Celtics, 7:30 on ABC. Boston, 6.5-point home favorite, according to ESPN Bet. Major League Baseball finals yesterday. Cardinals down the Cubs at Wrigley, 2-1. St. Louis is 35-35. Cubs continue their rough stretch, 34-38. The overall record for Chicago. Other finals, the Toronto Blue Jays do the Twins a favor and take care of business against the Guardians, winning at home 7-6 yesterday. Brew Crew wins at home over Cincinnati 5-4. Milwaukee now 42-29. Detroit lost to Houston 4-1. Twins and the A's played 2 yesterday. There were a lot of highlights for Minnesota, winning game 1 6-2, winning game 2 8-7. And one of the unsurprising highlights is the absolute heater that Carlos Correa continues to ride.
And this ball hit a ton. That one's headed for the stratosphere. High in the sky and deep to left, home run for Carlos Correa.
Big time offensive plays, defensive plays, snags over the fence. Everything adds up to a pair of wins yesterday for Minnesota. The new record, 40-32. The winners yesterday, Bailey Ober, Josh Staumont, and also Yoan Duran and Griffin Jacks get a pair of saves. Duran's 11th, Jacks is 6th. Of the season. Other finals, Pittsburgh over Colorado 8-2. The White Sox lost in the desert to the Diamondbacks 12-5. And the LA Dodgers get a job done against Kansas City. Royals go down swinging in this one. And Shohei Ohtani, one of many big blasts yesterday in the win.
First ball swinging, it's a towering drive, deep right field, this ball's gone, he's done it again, Shohei Ohtani doubles up with a home run, number 2 today.
That's AM570 LA Sports. Final score there, Dodgers 3, Royals nothing. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, light schedule. Cardinals at Marlins 5:40 the start time. Other games, Tigers at Braves, Giants at Cubs. Rockies host the Dodgers, Brewers at the Angels. You can watch that one on ESPN Plus tonight in 8:30 start time. Your latest American League standings out the AL East. The Yankees still the class of that division, 50-24. 1.5 games better than the Baltimore Orioles and 12 games up on the third place Red Sox. Out to the AL West, it's Seattle's division right now, 43-31. They're 8.5 games better than Texas and 9 games better than the third place Astros. And your latest standings in the AL Central, things are back tightening up just a little bit. Guardians are 44-25, 5 games better than the Royals and 5.5 games better than the Twins. Tigers are 11 games back and the White Sox in the cellar at 19-54. WNBA finals from yesterday. The Indiana Fever notch another win, their 5th of the season, with a 91-83 home victory over Chicago. Caitlin Clark, 23 points, 8 rebounds, and 9 assists. Other finals to take note of, big game for Brittany Griner, 28 points, 9 rebounds, in an 87-78 win for her Phoenix Mercury against visiting Seattle. Phoenix now 7-7 on the season. And tonight, the WNBA. Wings visit the Lynx. Minnesota is 10-3. That's a 7 o'clock jump time tonight. NASCAR race over the weekend, the first ever at the top circuit of NASCAR from the Iowa Speedway. Ryan Blaney takes the checkered flag in first place, followed by William Byron and Chase Elliott. And a magical and momentous, frankly, occasion yesterday for the U.S. Open from Pinehurst. Great weekend. Bryson DeChambeau, Rory McIlroy, couple oofta-style putts in the last 9 holes or so, including a crucial miss for Rory late. Bryson DeChambeau, couple impressive shots late to earn his second ever major victory there at the U.S. Open. Here's what he had to say about taking home his second title there at Pinehurst.
1,000th USGA championship. I mean, just stack them on top. That bunker shot was the shot of my life. I'll forever be thankful that I've got longer wedges.
Big-time bunker shot late in the round for DeChambeau. He is 6-under, McIlroy 5-under, Tony Finau, Patrick Cantlay in third at tied for 4-under par. Lastly here from DeChambeau, talking about his mentality down the stretch, leading the round and hanging on to the win.
I just, every time I got over the ball, I said, just focus, focus. You've done this before. You can do it again. In the back of my mind, my dad pushing me, pain was on the back of my mind as well, and I wanted to do it for them.
Again, Bryson DeChambeau yesterday from Pinehurst, number 2, 6-under par, his second U.S. Open title in his career. UFL title game took place yesterday. UFL season came to a close with a three-peat for the Birmingham Stallions, first ever UFL title, and they won back-to-back USFL titles the years prior with head coach Skip Holtz, 3 different quarterbacks. Adrian Martinez was the game's MVP, 25-0 win in the title game for Birmingham over the San Antonio Brahmas. College baseball, North Carolina lost to Tennessee yesterday 6-1, and Virginia, officially the first team eliminated, losing to Florida State 7-3. Today from Omaha, we got an elimination game coming up at 1 o'clock. It's Florida and NC State. Watch it on ESPN. Non-elimination game, winner's bracket for now, Texas A&M in Kentucky, 6 o'clock tonight on ESPN. Moving forward into your ReliaBank headlines of the day for your Monday. The 18th hole at Pinehurst number 2 on Sunday turned LIV Golf League captain Bryson DeChambeau into a U.S. Open champion again and left Rory McIlroy still trying to end his nearly 10-year drought without a major championship win after arguably the most heartbreaking near miss of his career. After watching McIlroy inexplicably miss a short par putt for the second time in 3 holes on the 18th, DeChambeau hit a difficult punch shot from a near tree root in the native area and into a bunker across the fairway. Most golfers, that is a disaster. It was not the case for Bryson yesterday. From 55 yards away, he chipped to about 4 feet and sunk a par putt to finish at 6-under, 1 shot better than Rory. DeChambeau went on to say, I was going to try and birdie the hole on 18. Obviously, if I hit a good drive, but pulled it. But I knew where Rory was after my tee shot. I was there going, man, if he makes par, I don't know how I'm going to beat him. I just really don't know. Then I heard the moans, like a shot of adrenaline got into me. I said, okay, you can do this. And DeChambeau was the clutch player yesterday. He was the better player throughout the weekend. I'm a Rory guy. I would love to see him capture one of these things, but it was a great word that they used there, inexplicable miss. Couple lip outs for both Bryson and for Rory down the stretch. It was one of those days on a Sunday where you're like, man, does anybody really want to win this thing? And I'm not saying it's easy. I know how difficult those greens are. I would be on one green all day long. Absolutely. But that was fun yesterday. One of the best majors we've seen in a while in terms of coming down to the finish, all the intrigue, all the misses, all the emotions. And Bryson DeChambeau comes out on top for his second U.S. Open victory and another near miss in the career of Rory McIlroy. Ryan Blaney had his concerns heading into the final laps last night in the inaugural NASCAR Cup Series race at Iowa Speedway. The problem was he didn't hear his crew chief's reassurance. There was no need to worry, though, for Blaney, with the defending series champion holding on for his first victory of the season and clinching a spot in the NASCAR playoffs. Blaney seemed in control of the race, but was worried about fuel a couple weeks after running out of fuel on the final lap while leading at Worldwide Technology Raceway. It's why crew chief Jonathan Hassler came on the radio with fewer than 10 laps to go in the race to let him know that they were good on gas. I don't even remember him saying that, Blaney said. I figured we were okay, but I don't remember him saying that. I wanted to make sure he knew the whole situation, the crew chief said. Sometimes I forget he doesn't know what I know, so I just try to communicate as much as I can so he knows what's going on. Ryan Blaney takes home his first win of the season. Then a disappointing start to the year for Blaney in terms of near misses, near victories. He gets one done, and a first ever for the sport of NASCAR racing at the Cup Series level at Iowa Speedway. That was a lot of fun last night. Blaney led four times for a career-high 201. Laps and finished 7/10 of a second ahead of William Byron for his 11th Cup victory. Birmingham is home to a football dynasty. The Stallions shut out the Brahmas 25-0 yesterday to win the UFL championship. With the win, the Stallions have won three consecutive spring football championships as they won the USFL title in 2022 and 2023 before the spring leagues merged together. The USFL, XFL come together to make the UFL this year. I thought it was a pretty fun and successful season overall. And the most impressive part is that Coach Skip Holtz, the king of spring, as USA Today has dubbed him, has won three consecutive titles. That's great. You're doing so amid the turmoil and the uncertainty of the leagues, mixed in the fact that you merge in, you got all these other talented squads out there. But the most impressive part of what Skip Holtz has done in Birmingham is the consistency despite the change at the quarterback position. In 2022, they won the title with Jamar Smith. 2023, they did it with Alex Magoo. And this year, it was Adrian Martinez, former Husker, MVP of the league, MVP of the title game, 25-0, dominating effort over the San Antonio Brahmas to bring home their third consecutive title. Finishing up your ReliaBank headlines of the day here for hour number one, couple other things to get to. Former Illinois forward Coleman Hawkins, the best player remaining in the transfer portal, announced late last week that he is committed to play at Kansas State. Hawkins visited the Wildcats campus last weekend after a scheduled trip to Louisville was canceled. An upcoming visit to LSU was also called off, which left head coach Jerome Tang's program as the clear favorite. Again, Coleman Hawkins, Illinois transfer, will be a member of Kansas State moving forward. Drama, 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 drama from the WNBA. We get it every time Caitlin Clark comes out onto the floor. And the second WNBA installment of Caitlin Clark against Angel Reese made as many headlines as the first. Clark's Indiana Fever took down Reese's Sky yesterday, 88-83, in a game that'll be marked by the flagrant foul that Reese committed against her college rival. Reese, the former LSU star who has been inexorably linked to former Iowa star Caitlin Clark since their much-hyped matchup back in 2023 in the women's Final Four, delivered a hard blow to Clark's head as Clark drove to the basket in the third quarter. Officials eventually upgraded the call to a flagrant foul one after a video review, but Reese seemed to take exception to the ruling, describing it as merely a basketball play after the loss. "I can't control the refs," she said. "They affected the game a lot tonight. I'm always going for the ball, but y'all gonna play that clip 20 times before Monday. Reese was called for 5 fouls and was visibly frustrated at times during the game. She was assessed a delay of game warning at one point in the fourth quarter after a prolonged argument with officials. It was ugly and bad. And again, if you haven't seen the play, look at it for yourself. I would say it was on the borderline there of a basketball play versus frustration versus being behind Caitlin Clark. Definitely made contact with the head, neck area. Ugly looking foul. Was it absolutely intentional to try to hurt her, to try to send a message? I'm not so sure, but definitely not just a basketball play, as it is with many things in sports, somewhere in between the extremes that are being painted here on your Monday. Of the many big injury news and related items from Major League Baseball, this one is pretty darn concerning for the LA Dodgers as we wrap up your ReliaBank headlines of the day. Shortstop Mookie Betts broke his left hand when he was hit by a pitch during the seventh inning of yesterday's game against the Royals. The former MVP, seven-time All-Star, was drilled in the hand by a 98-mile-per-hour fastball, and he fell to the ground writhing in pain. Manager Dave Roberts didn't know how much time Betts would miss, but said the injury would not require surgery. That's the latest there on Mookie Betts, a broken hand on a hit-by-pitch. Pretty bad luck for the Dodgers. The issue, though, beyond Betts, is they've got some other injuries to deal with. Couple big names are dinged up, including Corbin Carroll of the Diamondbacks, Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Dodgers also on the injured list, and more. We'll get to those later on in the show. We're going to take the break, come back with the latest and greatest on this day in sports history. Every Monday, we try to get you your toe dipped in to the world of sports history. We'll do that next. It's the Monday edition of Overtime. Thanks so much for being with us on this rainy Monday in Sioux Falls. Back with more after this.
Stream us online, stream us on the app. Streaming now, Overtime with Burt Rameen on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
We're off and running on this Monday, June 17th edition of Overtime. Thanks so much for tuning us in, as always, right here on your Sioux Falls sports leader, ESPN 102.3, AM 1000 KSOO. If you're normally listening on a Monday, you know that we've got a spot reserved every single week on your first day of the week for a little sports history chatter. That's where we go right now. It is time for On This Day in Sports History.
History repeats itself.
Little roller up along first. Behind the bag. It gets through Buckner.
Well, sometimes.
Over. You believe it, Darvish? Yes!
In the world of sports, there are moments that are fleeting.
And Bonds, that went high. It's a game.
And some that live forever.
In the end zone, it is caught.
It's time for Bert to deliver those moments that happened on this day in sports history.
On this day in sports history, we take a big time rewind all the way back to 1880 for our first topic of the day. On this day in sports history in 1880, the Providence Grays. Major League Baseball pitcher John Ward threw a perfect game on this day, beating the then Buffalo Bisons 5-0. That was the second perfect game in the National League in 6 days. On this day in 1880, the next time that happened was in 84 years. 1953 on this day was the most runs scored in one inning, 17 runs in one single frame scored by the Boston Red Sox. 1960 on this day, some guy named Ted Williams hit his 500th career home run. 1962 on this day in sports history, Oakmont Country Club, the site for Jack Nicklaus winning his first major title by 3 strokes in an 18-hole playoff win over Arnold Palmer. 1976, the ABA, the Nets, Pacers, Nuggets, and Spurs merged into the NBA. 1992, the 76ers traded Charles Barkley to the Phoenix Suns on this day. Other events down the line, 1997, the NHL announced that it'll add Nashville as a site in 1998, Atlanta in 99, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Columbus, Ohio in the year 2000. That announcement made on this day in sports history in 1997. And in 2003, the genesis, the origin of one of the great sports movies of all time took place. 2003, Moneyball came out, a book about the 2003 Oakland A's baseball team. General manager Billy Beane's sabermetric approach, inspired by Bill James, was originally published on this day in 2003. And on this day in 2008, the Boston Celtics took down the Lakers 131-92 in Game 6 for their first title in 1986, and 17th overall MVP of that series was Paul Pierce. Birthdays on this day. They don't make nicknames like this anymore in sports, and this is pretty darn cool. 1923 birthday for Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch, the American NFL tailback and end. Played for the Rams, born in Wausau, Wisconsin in 1923, passed away in 2004. Today is the 59th birthday of Dan Jansen, the American speed skater, Olympic gold medal winner in 84, 88, and 1992. Was born on this day, 1965, in West Alice, Wisconsin. Other birthdays, Dermani Dawson celebrating a birthday, born in Lexington, Kentucky on this day in 1965, and former Green Bay Packer offensive lineman, Wisconsin native Mark Tauscher celebrating a birthday today, 1977 birthday. And lastly, Venus Williams, 44 years old today, one of the all-time greats of women's tennis, born on this day in 1980 in Linwood, California. That is your daily dose of sports history here on this day in sports history on Overtime. When we come back, we just talked to you guys about how the Celtics beat the Lakers on this day in 2008 to end a long drought. Now, the Celtics are looking to do it again, not as long of a drought, but looking to seal the deal for Game 5 of the NBA Finals. We'll have Sam Amico joining us next, senior NBA writer at HoopsWire.com, talking to us about the keys, what he took away from Game 4. Was it just a gentleman's sweep? Was it just a one-time thing and Boston gets it back on their home floor and finishes the job tonight? Or was there something more there in Game 4 that inspires Sam Amico to think maybe this is a six-game series? Maybe this is a seven-game series? We'll get his take on all sorts of topics coming up next. Sam Amico, senior NBA writer at HoopsWire.com. Don't go anywhere. More of Overtime next on a Monday.
Don't miss a moment of pro sports action. Stay connected and download the app for Overtime on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you on this Monday edition of Overtime. Ever miss any of the show? Podcast links are easy to find, ESPNSiouxFalls.com or on the free ESPN Sioux Falls app. We got a Game 5. We got some bonus basketball. And for those folks that are fans of the Mavericks, fans of chaos, and fans of a prolonged series, I feel like I'm talking in dumb and dumber terms when I say, so you're telling me there's a chance, there might be some chance that Dallas can come back and win this whole thing? We'll now check in with one of our favorites and for the NBA circle, senior NBA writer at HoopsWire.com. Sam Amico joins us now on the ESPN hotline. Sam, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Hey, Bert, I'm doing well. Thanks again for having me.
We're excited to talk to you. I know when we were talking late last week, I was thinking we were either going to wrap up the season or we were going to be talking about a close win for the Mavs and we got some bonus basketball. But I want to ask you this, for those fans out there that are hoping for more after tonight, what did you take away from Game 4? And is there any concern in any particular order for the injuries or just the way that Game 4 went from a Boston perspective? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know that there's too much to worry about for the Celtics perspective. Obviously, you've had your way with Dallas at home. You got that big Game 3 win, and we all know nobody's ever come back from a 3-0 deficit. Game 4, obviously, very ugly for the Celtics. But guess what? They've had one of those in every series except for the Pacers. They lost to the Miami Heat at home in the first round. The Heat didn't have Jimmy Butler. They lost to the Cavs at home in game two. And obviously, you know, the Cavs were banged up. So Boston seems to have one of these stinkers almost every series. They had one against Indiana, but fortunately for the Celtics, they managed to still get a win. You know, and I don't know that Kyrie Irving, he's due for a big game in Boston. He's not been good in Boston. He has said that. He came out and said that, you know, he's due for a big game there and kind of would like to get it going. So maybe if he does, then all of a sudden, you know, maybe the Celtics have something to worry about with Doncic and Kyrie Irving both clicking in the same game. But you're still, if you're Dallas, you're going to need another guy, whether that's P.J. Washington or Derek Jones Jr. or Daniel Gafford or Derek Lively, somebody else besides your big two is going to have to really play well for the Mavericks to get this series to a game six.
Sam, I wanted to ask you something in regards to depth in the NBA, because lately it seems like we've had a little bit of a shift away from the big three, the super teams, those big pairings. Although Boston's got a lot of big personalities, a lot of stars, depending on what tier you want to put them in. That's a topic for another day. But I wanted to ask you, this postseason, we've seen the Timberwolves go on a run, very deep team. And of course, we got Boston here, in my opinion, the deepest team in the NBA, doing it here on the biggest stage and likely to wrap up the NBA Finals soon. Is that the new blueprint in the NBA? Couple big good players, stars, if you will, and then a really, really deep bench. What do you think it says about the current time, and current kind of phase we're in the NBA that these deep teams are getting it done?
Yeah, I think that says a lot, and I think that's the way it's shifting. You know, and it wasn't just this year with Boston and Dallas, but you look last year with Denver had great depth and won the championship. Miami had pretty good depth, lost some of that depth this past off season, but when they were in the finals last year. So it's really been kind of a trend that started maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and Bert, you look at super teams, right? The Phoenix Suns out in the first round, swept by a team that doesn't have the big name stars yet in the Minnesota Timberwolves, but has great depth and stars that are certainly on the rise in the likes of Anthony Edwards. But I just think you look at these super teams that are kind of now they're getting older. The Lakers, which, you know, they tried it with LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Russell Westbrook, didn't work. And then of course LeBron and Anthony Davis hasn't worked. So, and that team doesn't have any depth. So I think that we are seeing a shift away from that where it's, you know, we have stars. They're not the super duper duper stars, but we have stars if we're the Boston Celtics who have been together for a while and we filled in around them with nice pieces in Kristaps Porzingis and Jrue Holiday, to complete really what was a team that just need a little more depth, and here they are. So yeah, I definitely think the so-called big three era has, you know, come to an end, and is being replaced by teams that have two really good players, maybe two all-stars, and good depth. That's kind of the plan and how to build nowadays.
Sam Amico, senior NBA writer at HoopsWire.com, is our guest, breaking down Game 5 of the NBA Finals, getting going tonight again from Boston, 7:30 on ABC. The Celtics are a 6.5-point favorite as of this morning at ESPN Bet. When it comes to keys tonight for both teams, what will it take for Boston to get the job done? And what will it take? I know that the answer is probably big games from Luka and Kyrie and somebody else, like you alluded to here a second ago. Give me a key for both squads tonight to prolong the series from Dallas's perspective and to seal the deal and put the final nail in the coffin from the Celtics side.
Well, for Boston, you just have to play like you have the first three games, you know, which is being able to withstand anything Dallas throws at you. And mostly Boston's been incredible defensively. Even though Luka and Kyrie are putting up pretty good numbers, everything for them has been a struggle. And that starts with the backcourt, Boston's backcourt of Jrue Holiday and Derek White. You know, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown get going. You throw all those things together. But the key for Boston really is defensively. They've been so good, not just out on the perimeter, but outstanding at the basket, defending the basket. And that, especially when Porzingis is in there, Dallas gets nothing easy at the basket. So that's the big key for Boston, just return to the defense that they've been showing, or at least showed the first three games, that kind of effort, and they should be able to capture the championship tonight. Now, Dallas, obviously, like you said, going to get big games from Luka and Kyrie. Got to make them make things easier for them. And the way you do that is you have a role player or two stepping up and hitting shots. And if you can do that and you find a way, if you're the Mavericks, to make things easier for Luka and Kyrie and not make everything such a chore, which was the case in the first three games, then you've got a shot. You've got a shot, because those games in Boston before were close. They just needed one guy to step up, and nobody else did. If they can get that one guy, I think they've got a shot.
And certainly a lot of storylines heading into Game 5 tonight from Boston. As we move forward, I wanted to ask you, between the two teams, the staying power, some folks out there are already saying Boston will be back in the mix for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years with this core, as long as it's together and healthy. What do you make of Boston's staying power beyond what happens tonight and in the series to be a big-time player in their conference and for the NBA Finals? And then also for Dallas, they've got the really competitive West to deal with. I wouldn't put them as a favorite to get back here very soon. But what do you think this team needs moving forward? I know the answer is probably more players, more scorers. What do you think Dallas needs to be a consistent contender in the West for the next 2, 3, 4 years?
I think they just need more experience together. And familiarity, you know, could use some help off the bench, certainly. But you have to remember, they just got P.J. Washington and Daniel Gafford at the trade deadline in February. You're talking about a team here that didn't make the playoffs at all last season, didn't even make the play-in tournament. So this has really been quite a run from a team that, you know, I don't think a lot of people expected to be here. I just think you need more time together, more familiarity. There's a lot to be said for not breaking things up. We look at Boston. They didn't break up Tatum and Brown. They just kept trying to build around them. And I think that's what, you know, Dallas is going to need. Now, granted, it's, you know, the Western Conference is something else nowadays. You know, obviously Denver, Minnesota, Dallas. You still got the Clippers there. You still got the Oklahoma City Thunder, who finished with the best record in the West. Houston's on the rise. New Orleans on the rise. I mean, this is a conference that could have a different team just about every year for the next 7, 8 years. So, you know, it's just about trying to stay together, building off of what worked for you. Boston, not much different. I would say that their odds are a little bit better than, you know, Dallas's to get back to this stage. But the Eastern Conference, again, very tight. Granted, Boston won by a lot of games. I think 16 games or something they won the conference by. But I would say that things are close if everybody can stay healthy in the East still. And it's no cakewalk. It's not going to be a cakewalk for Boston. They're not, you know, look, they're not the 2014 to 20 Warriors or Cavs or any of that. They're good. I just don't think they're heads and tails above everybody else where they can just say, you know what, we'll be back here next year.
All good thoughts there. Sam Amico of HoopsWire.com, senior NBA writer. Before we let you go, we're in Timberwolves country. I know last time we talked was at the peak of the season, peak of the postseason, peak of fandom and everything else for the Timberwolves. They had the 2-0 lead against the Nuggets in that series when we talked to you last, Sam. So we're down off that. People have taken a breath, had the big-time elation of winning that series, but then the letdown of losing to Dallas in the series following. Talk to us about the Timberwolves, their immediate future questions and things like that. What do you make of the Timberwolves from a national perspective as we gear it up for the next year and beyond in Minnesota?
Just invaluable experience this year. You know, even though it ended short of the finals, to beat the defending champions in a playoff series to me was, you know, that was huge. That was probably a step that not a lot of people saw that Minnesota being able to take this year. So I think that it's all, you know, they're on the up and up. Obviously, outstanding coach and Chris Finch and great stars and Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns, great defender Rudy Gobert, professionalism Mike Conley. I mean, they really have it all right now. Just need to add some pieces around the fringes without giving up too much. And again, just there's a lot to be said for running it back.
Yeah.
You know, because you have the mindset. These guys have played together now. They've won together now. And I think it's just run it back, try to stay healthy, add some depth, and you know, great things could be on the way. This team could, you know, we're talking about Minnesota. They could very well be in the NBA Finals next season. There's no reason to believe they couldn't with this current lineup. So, you know, I just think the sky's the limit for this franchise as long as you don't get too caught up in, you know, making all these moves and feeling like you panicked. And I don't get the sense that the Timberwolves are going to do that. The front office seems pretty content with the way things are and just that you need another year together and to grow off this experience. But what an exciting time. I think going into next season should be very exciting for Minnesota. I know a lot of people will have them pegged to get to the finals.
Very well said. Always good stuff. Sam Amico of HoopsWire, senior NBA writer there, HoopsWire.com. Sam, I hope you enjoy Game 5. Personally, I hope we get some bonus basketball beyond. I'm not so sure, though. Thanks so much for the time, as always. We hope to do it again here with you soon on the show. Thanks, Sam.
All right, Bert, thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
All right, can't wait for that already. Great analysis and a great blurb there on the Timberwolves. In case you're still downtrodden about Minnesota losing that series to Dallas, the future so darn bright for Minnesota. And like I said, when they had the opportunity to take care of Denver to win that series, you keep bumping your head on that round just prior to the conference finals. Minnesota punches right through that ceiling and on to the next. And we'll wait and see. I'm not saying it yet. There's a long offseason ahead, but Minnesota should be in the mix of the top teams favored to reach the NBA Finals and win the NBA Finals next season. That's your basketball talk. When we come back, we'll shift gears and talk about the football team out in Iowa City. The Iowa Hawkeyes come into focus next. Sean Bach of 24/7 Sports joins us next on the Monday edition of Overtime.
It's so convenient. Sports on the go. Download the free app now. This is ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on the Monday edition of Overtime. You guys are going to call me crazy out there, but I swear, in my mind, college football season starts next week. We got the summer. It is beautiful outside. Maybe not this morning and overnight, but it's been beautiful more often than not. We can't wait. More golf in store. Everything down the line of summer, it goes by quick. Kids get back in school, and all of a sudden, it's week zero. We will be here before we know it with Iowa Hawkeye football, Minnesota Gopher football, SDSU, USD, everything in between. Here to break down the Iowa Hawkeye offseason, the new offensive coordinator, and everything abuzz in Iowa City, Sean Bach, one of our favorites from 24/7 Sports, swings by via the ESPN hotline. Sean, been a while since we talked to you. How you doing?
Doing well. Yeah, you know, kind of taking in the whole offseason. Kind of been a quiet one outside of the Tim Lester hiring, and recruiting's picking up this month, so you know, kind of picking and choosing what's been important, but you know, this week should ramp up a little bit recruiting wise, and then you know, the rest of the summer it's a little bit of recruiting here, a little bit of recruiting there, and then you know, it's prepared for fall camp. And like you said before we got in there, Bert, that it's going to come fast, but you know, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, absolutely am as well. The Iowa Hawkeye season will open up on August 31st. That's a Saturday, home to Illinois State. Three straight home games to start the season. Iowa State with that great rivalry matchup week 2, Saturday, September 7th, and then Troy. Do not sleep on that program in week 3 out of the Sun Belt. Sean, let's talk a little bit about Tim Lester, because Iowa Hawkeye fans said, finally, we get a new offensive coordinator. Maybe we can score some points. But from your perspective, somebody with an inside look at the program, the players that are there, the formations, and what will be different offensively, what can you tell people about what to expect and what is different this year on the offensive side there in Iowa City?
Yeah, I mean, we got a little bit of a teaser of it when we went to the open spring practice that they hold every year back in April. And there's a little bit of this, a little bit of that, like kind of different combinations, different formations. Kind of the base of the offense is really sort of the same, but you know, there's a lot more guys in motion. There's different cadences. There's different, you know, routes. Like the route tree looks a little bit different. Tight ends are still really used, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this comes about this summer too, because Cade McNamara, I mean, the hope is that he'll be full go towards the end of the month. He wasn't full go for the entire spring. So Iowa was working with two scholarship quarterbacks at the time in Deacon Hill and Marco Linez. Deacon Hill, no longer with the program, entered the transfer portal, going to Utah Tech. Marco Linez, probably the third string quarterback this year. Iowa brings in Northwestern transfer Brendan Sullivan, who I think personally is more of a fit for Tim Lester's offense, but Iowa's going to ride with Cade McNamara right now and kind of see where he goes from here. I mean, he's still got some progress to make with that injury, with that leg, but, you know, if Iowa's pretty intrigued to see what can happen this offseason with this summer, these next couple of months, with a healthy quarterback room and guys who are more experienced, because, like I said before, they didn't really have that. So with Lester, it's going to be more of a modern type offense, you know, like I said before, formations, different cadences, you know, stuff like that. But it's like at the end of the day, man, you got to have the personnel to run it. And I think with this Iowa team, you know, a lot of people have really been clamoring for that big outside receiver, that X receiver. They don't really have that this year. They don't have a guy that's proven. But instead, there's going to be a lot of smaller, quicker guys on the outside, like Tim Lester had success with during his time at Western Michigan. So that's really going to be interesting to me there.
There's a lot of storylines, a lot to look forward to. And let's be completely honest about Iowa's offense. And I'm not trying to poke fun. I'm a Badger fan from Wisconsin, after all. And our offense is similar. You know, nobody says, look out for Wisconsin's offense. Look out for Iowa's offense. I know it's been really bad, but when things were good in Iowa City, the defense and the overall nature of the game was still not conducive to entertaining big plays. So we're not looking to reinvent the wheel. You're just looking to go back to scoring 17, 20, 21, 24 points per game and winning the football game instead of scoring 7, 10, 13 points and not performing on the offensive side. So just to be clear there, the expectations should be improvement, but not sky high in terms of becoming the next LSU scoring offense there in Iowa City. Sean Bach, our guest here, 24/7 Sports. There's a lot of people talking up the program in terms of the number of players back on the offense and defense. What's that number? Because they didn't lose a whole lot from last year's team outside of Cooper DeJean.
Yeah, I don't have the number at the top of my head right now, but it's probably like 19 or 20. I think it's 19 starters returned from last year's team, or 20 starters if you include the specialists, because obviously Torrey Taylor is gone too. Yeah, there's a lot of guys coming back. I mean, they did a great job of being able to retain guys in the offseason, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You look at getting Nick Jackson back for another year. Jay Higgins had the option of going to the NFL. He wanted to come back. Quinn Schulte could have gone to dental school, but he decided wanted to come back for another year. Sebastian Castro, who, I mean, I'm surprised it took me this long to mention, he could be a Jim Thorpe candidate, honestly, at that cash position, because he is just so talented and does so many things well on the defensive side of the ball. And then you look at offense, too. Getting Luke Lachey back was really important. Getting some of those experienced offensive linemen back was really crucial, too. And, you know, there wasn't, outside of maybe Deontay Vines, and then a backup defensive lineman in Ontario Thompson, there really wasn't much that left Iowa, that left the transfer portal, that went to the transfer portal that you would consider a loss. I mean, Deacon Hill, really respected guy, really respected dude, but, like, just wasn't the answer for Iowa's quarterback position. And, you know, other guys, more of depth pieces were guys that left, and special teams guys even. So, yeah, I mean, you didn't really lose a lot of guys to the transfer portal, and outside of Cooper DeJean not coming back, I mean, you maybe wish, you think about a few months ago, like, had Cooper DeJean known he would have been a second-round pick, would he have come back to Iowa for another season? That's obviously, you know, in the past, can't change it, but, you know, just thinking about that makes it interesting to see what this defense could have been if DeJean comes back. But, you know, they have four guys at the cornerback position right now. I mean, I didn't mention Jamari Harris earlier, but he's a six-year guy. They're hoping he can, you know, continue to take that next step forward after missing last season part of the season. So, you know, there's a lot of intrigue with this defense and with the offense. You know, they return a lot of guys. This offensive line needs to really take that step forward because, you know, it hasn't been the Iowa offensive line that we're used to. Well, you know, this is probably the most experienced group that offensive line coach George Barnett has had during his time at Iowa, and I think that's really going to pay off, whether or not Caden Proctor's there or not. or offensively too, like the receiver positions, like I mentioned, you know, there's talent there, but can they, you know, become serviceable talent outside of Caleb Brown? Can Seth Anderson take that next step? You know, I mean, like I said before, they did as well as they could have in the offseason, I think, in terms of retaining guys outside of the gene, but that was still going to be a bit of a reach. And then bringing in a guy like Brennan Sullivan, too, at quarterback position, I think is really, really important because he gives you that more reliable safety valve at the backup quarterback position as opposed to what Deacon Hill gave last year, which, you know, we saw what that was. And it wasn't – it. You know, Iowa won games, but, you know, in this new era of the Big Ten, that's not really going to work often.
And again, expectations still pretty high for Iowa this year with all the returners. Talking with Sean Bach of 24/7 Sports. You can find him on Twitter at SBach247. Lastly, before we let you go, Sean, highlights on the schedule. Something jumped out to me, and I know you probably have found it out as well and thought about it a little bit. Three straight home games to start it out. The road games this year for Iowa, there's not a lot of them. There's just five total road games. And the only one to me that I say, hey, that's probably a loss is week five at Ohio State in Columbus. The other road games at Minnesota, at Michigan State, at UCLA, and at Maryland. That's pretty darn favorable schedule-wise for Iowa. What stands out to you about the schedule for the Hawkeyes here in 2024?
Yeah, I think it was five most important games on the schedule for Iowa or this season. And, you know, obviously the Ohio State one, while I don't think it's going to be a big win, or I don't think it's going to be a win, that's going to be a really interesting matchup to see how they kind of stack up against a team like the Buckeyes, who seems like the heavy favorite to win the Big Ten this year. Because if you think about the last time these two teams played, Ohio State just boat raced Iowa and Columbus. And for Iowa to come back and, you know, make things interesting, maybe they get a couple of touchdowns instead of not being able to move the football down the field like they did in that last meeting, that can be really important. I really think this Washington game, too, really intrigues me. I know it's an Iowa City night game. I think that's going to be a really good test for this Iowa team because Washington could be a sneaky good team. I mean, I know they lose literally almost everybody, but, you know, they have a pretty good roster that I think could surprise some people in the Big Ten this year just based off what they brought and what Fish has brought to the program. I think that could be a really good game. And, you know, kind of one of those welcome to the Big Ten type games where, you know, it's after the Ohio State game. Then you got the rest of the schedule that, like you said, Bert, is pretty favorable.
Yep.
So if you can beat Washington at home and, you know, maybe have a pretty solidifying victory, you know, who knows what the rest of the season could look like. That could really set the tone for the rest of the year. And, you know, that's why I think it's a pretty important one, too.
All sorts of storylines, all sorts of fun ahead for the Iowa Hawkeye football program. That's your off-season check-in. Sean Bach of 24/7 Sports. Find him again on Twitter at SBach247. Sean, we'll do it again here soon before we put shoe to ball later on to start the season. Thanks so much for joining us today. We'll check in again soon. Thanks as always.
Yeah, thank you, Bert, for having me. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right, Sean Bach of 24/7 Sports. Great all-encompassing update there on the Iowa Hawkeyes. The new offensive coordinator is Tim Lester. Is the offense going to be that different, that complex, and high-flying? Probably not. Let's temper our expectations. But if you could just go back to the glory days, i.e. 5, 6, 7 years ago when Iowa scored 20-plus points per game, this would be a much, much better program. I think that's what fans are realistically looking for. Not some crazy spread it out, chuck it around the field change, but a return to the roots and efficiency that once led Iowa football to bigger and better things. We'll take the break. Come back. Hour number two. Highlights, headlines, NBA, NHL, NFL talk. And, of course, the good, the bad, the ugly still to come here on Overtime. Back after this.